Nightshirts theme song.
Nightshirts. Yeah.
Howdy, hey, and welcome to Nice Shorts.
I'm Fu Yang.
And I'm Johnny Niddle.
And this is a show where we interview animators about shorts they make.
Today we have Alexis and Scott, also known as Threadwood. In part one of our interview, they take us on a deep dive of all things Magical Cat.
From doing their own theme song and sound design.
To nailing down the timing of animating a cat.
So let's take a stroll through their early careers together.
From making animations for a furniture company.
And how that led to wedding rings.
Because they're, you know, married to each other.
And now on with the show.
Yay, hello.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, that's, isn't that amazing how I start things? I'm very good at this. Please tell all the people your magical selves and who you are.
Oh, okay. I'm Alexis, a.k.a. Lex.
I'm Scott. We're both stop motion specialists. We used to work in L.A. on shows and ads and stuff like that, and then we moved recently to upstate New York to do our own business. Work on our personal projects some more, as well as doing client work. So,
Your origin story was also covered in, I think, one of the Hello Stop Mo episodes.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good story.
It's like my origin for work is tangled up, and our origin is a couple. So,
right? Should we go over that briefly here?
Yeah, if you'd like to. From the stop motion for the mattresses, it was?
Yeah. So right before I graduated college, I got a job at Bob's Discount Furniture, which was local to the Northeast at the time. Now I think it's nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a guy there named Mike Bannon who was doing stop motion ads for this furniture company.
In-house.
And Mike Bannon, before that, he used to co-own a stop-motion company in Connecticut called Reckless Abandon Studios. And so he knew a lot about stop-motion and everything. He just happened to be animating, like, sofas and stuff like that, and, like, a little character. So anyways, I went there, and I was, like, interning for a little while, and then I got hired. I was doing stop motion back when I was a kid, like when I was 10 and 11. So I knew a little bit about it just from my experiments as a kid. And then so I learned from Mike Bannon how to actually do it. And then soon after, Alexis also got hired there.
Mm-hmm. It was because we both got recommended by our illustration professor who, you know, we came at stop motion in different directions. Like Scott was just... He was already animating. I think you were doing 2D at that time, but you were also doing little like sculptures and stuff.
Yeah, it was
so that's kind of like your entry, right? Yeah, and then mine, I like illustrated a children's book for my senior thesis in three-dimensional space. So it was like puppets with costumes and sets, and I was taking photographs of everything. So it was like a little skip into making stuff for stop motion after that.
Right. And then so we wound up dating.
At Bob's.
While we were working together.
Yeah.
It worked out, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Also, Scott saw my piece in my thesis show.
Yeah, before Alexis started working at Bob's, I had gone to the senior show for UConn, the senior art show, and I saw Alexis's project, her book that she did with the puppets and everything. That was the only thing. Well, it wasn't the only thing I liked from the show, but that like stood out to me.
It was. It was the best piece.
It stood out to me. And then so I went to Bob's like the next day and I told Mike, my boss, about Alexis's project, and then she wound up working there.
It wasn't the reason, but that was probably helpful.
Yeah. And then so from Bob's, we started doing like some personal projects. I worked on character animation outside of work, and I was sending like a really bad reel to like every stop motion studio I could find. And nobody got back to me except for a company called Loose Moose in the UK who did that really good brisk iced tea ad with Rocky. It was like black and white.
Yeah.
An old stop motion ad. Anyways, they were the only ones who got back to me just to tell me to like encourage me and tell me to keep going. So then I did. Mm. And the next reel I sent out, I had a lot of my own personal character animation experiments.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's how I got a job at Stupid Buddy Studios eventually. So that's when me and Alexis moved to Los Angeles.
Well, that other connection too was that the one of the owners of Stupid Buddy, which was like brand new at the time, was like 3 months old.
Stupid Buddy Studios?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Harv used to work for our old boss, Mike, so they had a connection. And so that's how, like, Scott's stuff got in front of, like, the animation director there and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there was a connection there. So.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like, we see Threadwood's work, especially the look and also the animation are fantastic. Like, it's hierarchy, it's super great. So I'm very surprised, like, Scott feel like your reel is bad. Like, I cannot imagine that. So I would love to know that. Yeah.
Somewhere. I wouldn't say that it was bad even when you had that reel. And also, yeah. Like, you know, you just kind of, it, like, that's so long ago now, you know? Like, I'm not going to date myself and say how long that was, but...
Over a decade ago.
Yes.
Oh, when you were both 10.
We were both very young.
What were you, like, early 20s?
Yeah. So, I mean, we moved to LA when I was, like, 25, so...
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
But yeah, at the time, like, my reel, the first reel that I put together, I thought it was amazing. You know,
yeah.
Like now that I've been working in stop motion for so long, I look back at it now and it's embarrassing.
You have to start somewhere. No, I refuse to accept
that. Okay, here's a question. So, like, music, I have old stuff, same as yours, where I go, I don't want to hear it. I listen to what I did and I go, gross. But there's sometimes, here's something I did when I was like 15 with like the cheapest equipment and go, how did I do that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have that with, like, stop motion seems a much more skilled thing where you don't accidentally do good stuff when you're young, or do you?
Well, I think there was also, like, we started making things, like, even that book and stuff, like, the technology's advanced a lot since then, so it's just, like, also the image capture quality is significantly different, and, like, I think all that kind of, like, artifacts and stuff that are cooked into older projects right now when you don't have the money to have like expensive gear when you're young, like that kind of, it's unintentional, so maybe that's part of that's a little frustrating about it, but also like obviously you've improved so much as an animator since then that it's like it's hard to look at for you.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying. Like sometimes I'll look back at stuff that I did a long time ago and my old self inspires my current self because back then I would just go for it because I didn't know the right way to do everything.
Mm.
And it would still turn out fine. But nowadays if I want to do something because I'm a professional now and like I have all this experience, it's like I've got to go through all these steps that all the pros do before I can like get to actually doing the thing instead of just experimenting without that pressure on my shoulders.
There's like, oh man, I'm going to be so annoyed that I don't know the actual quote for this, but it's something like being a beginner means like you have endless possibilities and when you become an expert, you've like limited your possibilities. So it's like trying to remember what it feels like to be a beginner again and be like, I don't care. I'm going to try everything and see what happens. Yeah. Like that's very exciting.
Yeah.
You just hope that your skill level eventually matches that like ambitiousness that you have.
We also have the thing, I think, now at our level where if we mess up, people's jobs and careers are ruined. So we have to plan a little more.
So much people working for you, just more responsibility.
So we have to plan and know file names and all the fun stuff. So from watching your old self that you said inspires you, just like, you know, we didn't know our limitations. We were too dumb to think about it, so we just tried it. What is it that you think you have improved the most on? And then what is it that you kind of want to try to pull back out of that?
I think the skill level is what's probably improved the most. I think the, like, the excitement and, like, the enthusiasm is the stuff that we always, like, try to recapture. Like, I think most of – I'm answering for you, sorry. But I feel like most of the time when we make stuff, we just, like, want that, like, exuberance of being a kid a little bit in there because, like, that's the part that's exciting for both of us to capture in some way is, like – you're so excited. It's either like your favorite color or like something dumb that you've done that you find really hilarious that maybe nobody else will, but like, because you've committed so hard, somebody else will probably find it funny.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think that's a good answer. Skill level has definitely improved the most, like the skill and the technical know-how.
Yeah.
And the excitement is the hardest thing to get back, especially if you're working on like a client job or something. I still get part of the reason I like stop motion so much is because I still get that excitement when you get the puppet in front of the camera and you start taking the first few frames. It's really exciting to see it start to move and come to life. That's kind of a feeling I remember having a lot more as a kid. Like if I'd worked on a drawing and I'd go to bed and I'd get up and I'd be excited to go look at it again. And I used to play with music a little bit, which was the same deal. I'd work on a song at night and I'd be in love with it. And I'd get up in the morning and I'd be like, put my headphones on and listen to it again and be like, wow, this is great. So like Magical Cat, I think is that project for us where it's still fun and exciting for us. And especially if we really like nail the timing or something like that, it's really satisfying.
Yeah. And I think like this year we got particularly busy with client work, which was great, but it did mean like Magical Cat had to take a pause. But I think it was also, you know, a little bit of grief in there too, because like the last episode we did was literally when our cat passed.
Yeah.
So it was like a little hard to want to jump back in right away and make more.
That's also, yeah, one of the questions I was thinking is that, but you kind of answered. I was thinking, if you're ready, you still want to continue?
Yeah, it's always like, it's a constant like negotiation trying to find when it's going to fit. But we do have like a list of episodes that are still like waiting to come to fruition. And some of it's like, oh, I need to build some stuff for it. But some of it is just like set it up and start shooting again.
Do you keep all the sets so I can just, Is it help then that they're all, most of them are like just 2D flat paper?
Well, they're not paper. They're, I have some next to me, so I wasn't sure if you want to see some stuff, but they're 1/8 inch MDF that are like cut out to look like kind of like cardboard, you know, and then painted just so that they're like flats and then we can like move them around in space.
Yeah. So the more episodes we do, the more props and set pieces that we have and we can just pull from that instead of having to make new stuff for every episode.
And we've used the same floor and the same wall for everything except the Christmas one.
Yeah.
What was the order of it? So you mentioned that the cat was first and then the song.
The cat was first.
Yeah.
Our cat was first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the song, do you want to perform the song live?
Nope.
So,
and there's the song that is in the animations is actually a shortened version of the full song and that we're keeping just for ourselves.
Yeah. Also, it's because the full song completely goes off the rails after that point.
Yeah, part of shortening the song was like, I remember when we were recording the song, I have very limited musical ability. I have enough to make a little songs on a keyboard. And Alexis had like grander ideas, like having like sort of an orchestra sound to it, like, there he is, Magical Cat, like that. And I was like, I can't do that. And especially with the second verse for like the full version.
Now we met me.
The second verse of the full version of the song, like the timing changes and it gets a little crazy. So I tried to do it on the keyboard, but like I was just too limited. I couldn't do it, so we just kept it short.
Also, it's like when I say it goes off the rails, it also like goes off the rails for both of our like voice ranges.
Perfect. Yeah. I really do. The opening music fits so well. I was telling Fu earlier, like it's the same thing with your friends who did the Hello Stop Mo intro. It's like sometimes it's just perfect. Like you hear it, you see the thing, and you go, I don't know what else you could do. Like I really can't think of another thing it could be.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things. So there is a full version that you have for yourselves, which is, I understand.
Yeah. But I do want to hear it. Maybe you'll get a preview on or not recording.
Like, I mean, music think video.
Think of the people. What? Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh no! Just wondering if it become a music video for the whole song.
Yeah, like it's too long because the magical cat episodes are so short. It wouldn't make sense to have such a long intro.
Yeah,
it's not like a super long song, but it's long enough where it'd be like longer than the short itself. Almost. Yeah. Yeah, or the same length.
It'd be like a 20-second song and like a 30-second animation. You'd be like, this doesn't seem right.
If it was a bad song, maybe, but for that one, perfectly fine.
You know what? There's also a lot to be said for editing. So, like, we knew that part was just not. It's okay.
Okay, so part one, cat, part two, song exists.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you're both animators, so I'm guessing that was just always a fun conversation that existed.
Well, Sky is the animator. I can animate, but I'm not an animator.
Right.
I would say we're both like, we have director brains, like creative director brains. But
yeah.
He can realize the movement right now. I have to catch up. I'm not there yet.
Right. So it was the animation idea came up because COVID happened and the studio that I was working at shut down. And a lot of the stop motion animation production shut down when everybody was unsure what to do.
Yeah.
And so that's when Alexis and Casey and Apartment D, the studio in LA, started Animation Wildcard. And then so basically all of us and all of our animation friends were thinking of ideas that we could execute with limited materials and stuff because none of us wanted to go out and, like, buy.
Well, that was a stipulation at first. Like, because I didn't want to encourage anybody going to, like, a big box store or something when we didn't know how crazy the disease was and all that. It was like, no, literally, like, whatever you have at home, make something with that and nothing else. And you have 2 weeks to do it.
Magical Cat was built within those limitations where it's like, let's try to use what we have, keep it short. We have this fun song that we sing to our cat like every day. And we always really like the little Aardman shorts, like the Purple and Brown and Creature Comforts and stuff like that, where it's just these little vignettes of just kind of goofy but not off the wall goofy stuff.
It kind of came out of, we had a meeting with like a network developer person, and we were trying to come up with things that we thought the two of us could do. And we were really excited about like really old, like interstitials, like the things on like Saturday morning cartoons in the 90s, where there's like the after these messages, we'll be right back. Like, cause there are so many of those. And like,
you'll sing that, but you won't sing Magical Cat to us.
Exactly. Now there's like a whole different level of energy for Magical Cat. like those ones and like the things that they used to do on Nickelodeon for like the Nick Splats and things where any artist could come in and do something with the Nickelodeon logo. Like that's the kind of stuff where like, oh, we would love to do stuff like that. Like that stuff we could handle on our own. And that was like back in LA when we just had this really teeny one-car garage and like, you know, we were super limited. Now we're like a little bit, our capability has gotten a little bit bigger, but
You did do one.
But that was also the start of all of this, is we're like, what if we did these little bumpers that, mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe someone might want in the future.
So is this like a stepping stone then between the sci-fi thing you did going into more of a pitch idea?
Yeah.
I don't remember if sci-fi was before. Was it before Magical Cat?
Way before.
Okay. Yeah, sci-fi was a cool little project because we got it through Tongle, which is a service where, like, independent artists sign up and they have job postings and you can pitch through the website and everything. So it's like a really streamlined way to work with clients. The problem is that the pay isn't great. So it was like,
We didn't have any control over that. Like, it was like a set fee, but it was a good like starting point.
Yeah, it was a good starting point to like test out our space and our equipment and
with some like client notes and
some
stuff.
Some client notes, yeah.
It was pretty free.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's offset the cost a little bit of doing something you were gonna do anyway, sort of, right?
Kind of, yeah. Like, it was sort of like paying for the experiment, you know.
Mm. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
And then Magical Cat happened like 9 months later, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's very fast. All the timeline get-together is pretty. The schedule is pretty tight. Feel like
it was pretty tight. I think it was that quick.
Yeah. This is all between jobs at like Stupid Buddy Studios and stuff. It was like,
crazy. I was doing like production design work with Apartment D and like some art directing work.
So the first Magical Cat, it was Animation Wildcard, pandemic beginning. How long was the first one to do?
It was still 2 weeks. Like,
yeah.
Everything.
Because we were from the same deadline. I think, like, honestly, like, at this point, like, for both of us, we know what we can accomplish in a short period of time and what we can't. So it was, like, the more we can, like, simplify the build process and, like, obviously we're not doing multiple camera angles. I mean, we did two because it was, like, we did the one for the intro and then we did the second camera angle for the animation, like, short itself. But we really didn't do anything else other than that.
Yeah.
So we kept it like really tight as like a setup. And then, you know, my like Rodgers and Hammerstein brain was like, let's keep the intro changing every time. So we had to keep reshooting the intro.
Right. That's something that you notice if you go back and watch that every time, like the first, I forget how many, 3 or 4 episodes, we had a new like title card every time that was the animated adventure. We have to stop doing that because
now that I loved it.
I would kill myself animating the cat part, like the main chunk of it. And then after I was finally like done and all relieved, I was like, all right, now I have to set up and do this little title card that would take forever to set up and animate. So.
And then we also switched the letters at one point.
Yeah, and the letters were getting dustier and everything was getting dirtier.
Yeah.
So we just nixed that at some point and just started doing like digital changes to the intro instead of actually animating it.
Yeah, appreciate it still. Yes, every just little changes, subtle things, it always brings new surprise for the audience. At least for me, like, oh, it's a cockroach. Oh, the hand this time is like this. Or, oh, the snow. Like, I'm so happy.
See, that's why I was excited.
Yeah.
It made me think of those, like, Rugrats intros where you kind of get, like, a hint of what the like 11 minutes is going to be about by like Tommy's weird like imaginative sequence in the beginning.
Yeah.
If only you had a crew of 400, it'd be no problem.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It'd be so easy. One person would just be on intros. It'd be like, great.
About your shorts, the series, the timing is just, it's just so perfect. And you are so brave at, sometimes it's, you have so many suspensions. Is that the word? Like, you hold it and we are waiting for it. Like, so yes, I want to ask about how you communicate with the detail, how the movement and the, all the performance, what's happening during your conversation.
We do a lot of acting at each other.
There are reference videos of Magical Cat?
For you, but not us, like, just spitballing.
Right, well, When we come up with the idea, it's very casual. We're usually just like over breakfast or something. We're just talking about ideas.
Yeah.
And then I will sort of, for some of the episodes, I'll skip this step, but I usually sketch the shapes that the cat will go through throughout the episode. So like the first episode, you know, he changes from kind of just like a normal cat sitting there to like sort of an extreme, like open mouth and everything. And so I'll sketch that out so that I'm not guessing while I'm animating, because that's the worst if you're doing clay animation and like you re-sculpt a whole thing and you realize like that's not going to work and you got to re-sculpt it again. So I'll try to have all the shapes planned out. But then, yeah, me and Alexis will sort of talk about the timing. And you want those long beats with a cat because, I don't know, if like you play with a cat, there's so much, there is a lot of waiting. Like if you're waving a toy, it's like sitting there for a really long time and its eyes are slowly getting wider and then like eventually it counts.
They're like a calculating lazy predator, you know? They're just like really judging something in their head before they actually do something.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Just like, are you gonna, you know, now?
Yes.
No.
Right.
It's like living with a really indecisive murderer. You're like, what are you gonna do?
I don't know why they're so funny though.
Yeah, that's,
you like don't know when it's gonna happen, but you know it's gonna happen.
Yeah. And we both really like subtle comedy. So we don't like, the cat never is like jumping around or like bouncing off the walls, and it's not like in your face comedy with like zany sound effects and stuff like that. So we try to like trim any fat and keep it focused on just like one thing that the cat does that's hilarious, but not like slapsticky hilarious.
These cats are just weird.
So the timing is like super important, and the subtle shape changes. So when I actually start animating, I sort of figure out the timing as I go. And like you were saying, Fu, about like the long holds, it's like I'll get to like a resting point with the cat and I'll sort of like just take like a bunch of frames maybe where I'm just like touching the cat lightly so there's still like a little bit of movement.
Yeah.
And then I'll continue animating the rest of the shot, and then I'll just go back and I'll like duplicate frames to make like holds last longer or shorter, and just like keep playing with it until it feels
good.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that happens like while you're shooting sometimes, and then also additionally like afterwards.
Yeah.
When we're like looking at the edit and like,
yeah,
or like I get to have a lot of say, which is really fun.
Yeah.
I like if it makes me laugh like right away, it's like, okay, there's nothing, I don't have anything to say here. But if I'm like, then we have, we're like, okay, we're gonna have some room.
Network notes you can never avoid. Like, if the network notes wake up next to you, you can't avoid them.
Yeah, maybe you're just trying to make me laugh, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I show, if I'm working on the edit and like After Effects or something, I'll show Alexis what I'm up to. And it's important to me that she watches it and is amused by it like right off the bat. If not, you know, I have to tweak something, because I, when you're editing something, you're so like in it, it's hard to step back and look at it without
objectively.
So yeah, that's sort of how we figure out the timing. It's, we don't do animatics for Magical Cat because it would be, it's something that we had too cumbersome. We can skip that and just sort of figure that out once we animated it.
Well, what we do though, because like I think for an animatic, like most of the time those are important for, you know, timing and also shots. And we only ever have a single shot really. So like the timing can come like later when we just know like what our action points are. So like those are really clear. And like, that's why he does the like sketches ahead of time to make sure that those beats make sense. But we don't have to see those timed in an animatics. Then we would just run out of time to make the thing.
Yes.
But I will also always do like a style frame up front, so we know like where the cat is and like what's around it. And what he's interacting with or whatever. So that way, like, if I have to build anything, then I can, like, I have something to work off of.
What's a style frame?
Well, that's, like, kind of just a shorthand for what your frame's going to look like.
Okay.
Like, the color,
like, composition, you know.
Like a key pose of the entire thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
yeah.
Because you do the animation, but you said you'd go in and touch it to still kind of like ruffle the fur a bit. You basically just grab a couple, duplicate them, and just toss in so like there's still fur movement, and you do almost all that in post?
Yeah, because I don't want the hold to feel like the video is frozen for like a couple of seconds. I want it to feel like there's still some subtle something happening, some life to it.
So, yes.
Because a lot, you know, if... In stop motion, you can tell when it's just, like, one frame that's been held for, like, a long time. Because, like, suddenly, like, the fuzz on the costume stops moving or the wrinkles stop moving. And it's really obvious. So I do try to just lightly touch him, the cat, a little bit. Just, like, a little fingerprint.
And, like, you can get away with it in, like, 2D or CG because nothing's moving in them. So they can just hold. Like, and that's why, like, some 2D animation can be very, very cheap. Because it's like just like a flapper mouth on a body that's like not moving or something. But if you did that in stop motion, everything would look dead. Like it would just, there would be no engagement with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Do you loop the frames where the fur is moving, or do you kind of randomize them as you continue to do it?
That's a good question. And I try to do like at least 6 frames of,
Touching
the cat and then either looping them or like pasting them backwards or something like that. So it's not like a loop that the
you can see the pattern.
I try to randomize it sometimes, like you're saying. Sometimes I'll loop it and then I'll just like grab a random frame and like stick it somewhere in that long loop, so it changes.
That's a fantastic trick.
One we did like really particularly was we built the Yule Log cat to be able to do that because I had seen him do this over the course of like 6 before that I was like, oh, we can make a Yule Log. Like, I just need some repeating frames of the like fire and the cat, and like we'll just repeat it, and then he can have like a beginning, middle, and an end, and like those can just happen at some point within the hour, you know. So he's just like snoozing for a really long time, doing his little stretch, chilling out for a little while. We can repeat the little stretch.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing.
Right. So we're able to take that short episode and extend it into an hour long holiday Yule Log thing.
Yes. We play it. We play it during the holiday.
Yeah. With a full version of the theme song, because it's an hour long, you have to. So on that one, do you ever do green screen stuff on it? Is anything keyed out, or is everything one shot?
I don't think we've ever done
magical.
Yeah, everything is like in camera.
We haven't
done any separate elements or anything like that.
Because you're playing with the timing too. I don't know if this is what you do or not. Because I don't animate. But are you doing the camera zooms? Are you doing any of the moves in After Effects, or are they all practical with the camera shot?
Both?
Yeah, both. I think like the one where he sticks his head in the rain boot and then pulls his head out, that was like a practical camera zoom where I had the camera on a little track and I animated it getting in close. And then I think any other time there's been a zoom, I just wound up doing it digitally, because setting up a camera for a practical zoom is just, it takes a little bit too long.
When we did one... When he falls asleep.
Right, the one where he falls asleep, that I put the camera on a track and moved it horizontally practically in the beginning, just because
parallax.
They call it an X winder. It's like a camera track that
slider?
Yeah, it's like a slider where you can.
Is that your new toy for that track?
Yeah, at that time that was my new toy. So in the beginning of the episode where he falls asleep, the camera inexplicably just moves across just because I wanted to use it.
That's the new game. Find out what YouTube just bought for each new episode.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see that happen in the Halloween one, and then we like really ramp it up for the Yule Log, because it was like we did the tiny practical lights on the little tree for the the Halloween one, so there was like a little something to be like, oh, it's spooky times. And then the next one was like, I remember how to wire practical lights now. Let's really make it go crazy.
Yeah, so that was, so Magical Cat is also a good place for us to test new things, make sure that we understand them and stuff, so that when we work with a client, we have experience
doing that again,
like animating lights and stuff like that.
Because like it's all stuff we've done before, but usually with someone who's more of an expert in that area.
Yeah.
So like if we get stuck, we're like, help! And we're
yeah.
I mean, we still did that because we still have lovely friends, but you know, they just weren't on site with us.
Yeah. Do you two buy walkie talkies just to keep in the house and yell at each other?
We've talked about that.
Teasing them, I feel like we need walkie talkies, but
we will eventually.
Who doesn't want them?
Yeah.
You don't even need it. Just get like a house intercom system that's just the static noise and just push a button and the whole house will go.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So you started Magical Cat in the garage on the West Coast. Right.
Correct.
And yeah, you started to be in a pandemic, and I was talking to someone else about something recently. They were doing stop mo in the valley, though, but at the beginning of the pandemic, which people who don't know, in California, we were in a massive heat wave.
Mm-hmm.
So you were doing clay on the West Coast in the heat wave, and now you're in the Catskills where it is some days below freezing, doing clay again. I'm guessing now you're indoors, though. Is there a large difference in how you sculpt or animate with it in those weather variations?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I think we had a harder time in LA than we do here.
Yeah, LA was bad.
That's enough. That is enough.
We were doing Magical Cat in, I think we did...
We did the first one in the garage.
First one was in the garage, which was, like Alexis said, we were renting a small apartment that had a small one-car garage. Mm. And that's what we were using as our shooting space. And there was no insulation. There was no, like, weather control or climate control. And so I remember working at the camera would overheat and shut itself off.
That happened on Sci-Fi.
That was on Sci-Fi. But I also had to...
It had its own personal fan.
Yeah, I had to rig a little fan up next to the camera for Sci-Fi and also Magical Cat to keep the camera running because it would just shut down.
Wow.
And we were in, it was a tiny garage, and I was like surrounded by these hot lights.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the clay would get...
And we had a portable AC unit, but it had to be next to the computer.
Yeah.
So you didn't get any.
Right. Brought in a portable AC to basically blow on the electronics to keep everything running.
Wow.
So working with clay in that kind of heat, it just starts to get soupy and sticky after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some tricks that I've used in the past. Like you can take the clay puppet and like put it in a freezer for a little while. Or if you take like an air can and turn it upside down, it's like,
it's a freezing spray.
You're right. You can freeze stuff. Wow. So sometimes I'd be sculpting and it would just start to turn into just goop and I'd have to like spray it and then keep sculpting.
That's cool.
So
that's what, okay, air canny means like the dust off stuff you'd use for like your keyboard.
Yeah.
Electronic dust spray.
That's a cool workaround. It's unfortunate for you that you had to do that, but it's a cool like... Yeah.
Also, don't freeze your fingers.
Yeah, it's dangerous too. Yeah,
and it's literally just the cleaner solvent freezing stuff.
Yeah. If you flip it upside down and you have the like little needle, the little straw. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just keep your hands out of it because like it's also, you know, it's a little toxic. So if you get in your hands, like you don't want to like lick your fingers or.
Yeah.
Wash your hands.
Is that also for like chocolate? They do chocolate sculpting.
I think there's an edible version.
Oh, yeah, but this one is not
the edible version.
Okay. Whoever was first and connected the dots, like they were cleaning a keyboard and decided to do upside down, froze something, and go like, hold on. And then somehow that got to an animator somewhere down the line.
It did. Like that's like industry standard for freezing hot glue.
Yeah.
Like, if you're working on a set and you're moving quickly and you need to like hot glue a bunch of stuff really fast and it's warm, like you just flip the cam upside down and go. Especially if we're doing like foliage or things that have like, I don't know, or things can hold heat a little bit longer too. Like it's really helpful.
That is cool.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Ooh, new tree.
I don't need to freeze anything because it's snowing outside, but I might try anyway.
Plenty cold right now.
Yeah.
And so now, like you said, we're in the Northeast and it gets really cold, but also it gets really hot here. So we've done some animation here and it does still get really hot because of the lights. It just warms up the room like crazy. So we haven't really had a problem with it ever being too cold. In fact, I wish it would be like too cold on a animation stage, but that's never the case. So out here we have better control of the climate in our working area, so it's been better out here for sure.
Now it's just consistently hot.
We're in like a 100-year-old house too, so like, you know, the windows and the insulation aren't great. But an air conditioner does a lot more here than it did in our very not insulated house/garage there. So
Yeah.
So are you set up, do you have like a room dedicated to your animating?
Yeah, we have a couple of rooms. And we've moved it around
a lot.
Because we bought this big old house because it had so many rooms and lots of space. So we've settled on like our main shooting area. It's like a nice big room with pocket doors, and we've got duvetine lining the inside so there's no light coming in. And then we have like an extra room up here that we use as like a alternate stage if we need to shoot extra elements or something like that. We have like a duplicate setup with lights and all that stuff. So we got this house because it also has like a big building out in the backyard, but it's not ready yet. Put like insulation and drywall and all that stuff in there. So eventually we'll move our work
out of the house,
which is
nowhere in the house.
Yeah.
Except for when you get like a foot and a half of snow and they're like, I have to walk to the shed.
Oh, what a commute.
Yeah. if you have a house party, someone goes in, they're walking in the wrong room and it's just all dark and out with little stages and cameras, so they'll be confused. Then they go to their freezer to get some cake and there's a frozen cat. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
This is why we don't have guests.
It is weird. Like we had it's weird to show people who don't know anything about animation. You're like, check out this room. It's like, just check out these cool animation stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, this is cool, all right.
You're like, thankfully most people who visit us love us, so they're like, yay.
Yeah, right, it's a default. Like, look how cool this thing is. It goes sideways and up and down.
Oh, yeah. It's like talking to an excited 5-year-old. They're like, good job.
If that exciting 5-year-old said, but it pays for everything you're looking at right now, I'd be like, oh, well, shit. Yes, very good job. Also, you're 5. Why are you working?
Now you're on the East Coast. It's more like move back, right? Because you're from there and so is that more because of the project around there you like more, or is the people, the lifestyle, like why you finally decide you want to go there, or is it more space?
I'd say the lifestyle, our family is close, and the space. It was most of those things. Like I think we're both still really sad that we're missing all of our like career friends, you know, like you develop a rapport with your team members and your colleagues and stuff. And it's just like when you have to be willing to leave that, which is really hard. And it's still like kind of heartbreaking, to be honest. But thankfully we both get to work with folks in different capacities now, and hopefully like future us we'll be able to do some stuff where maybe we can host people or do something where they can come to us for a little bit.
Yeah. There's also that Los Angeles isn't super hospitable for people like us, because there isn't there like is no finish line, because you can be very successful in the animation world, but still it's like all you can afford is like a little apartment.
Yeah.
And because the rent is so high, you have to keep working jobs, so you don't have time for your own personal projects, which is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of is like we wanted to be close to family, have more space and all that, but it's also like
a little more career flexibility.
Career flexibility. Mm-hmm. And just also feeling like you're kind of like, well, what's the end game in Los Angeles? It's like we get to work on really cool projects, and we make all these great friends, and we get to work with all these awesome creative people, but our personal lives are suffering because all of our entire lives is just the work, because you're trying to make rent, trying to save money, and you're never going to afford a house there because they're just, the prices are insane. So
I think it felt like we couldn't live the way we wanted to live, and like now, you know, sometimes we have like a little bit too much downtime, but but it's also kind of nice because it gives us a space to take like actual time off from a project and like decompress, where before it was like every time you're done decompressing, like you have to go into the next project. So it's like you don't really get to make any like even changes in your personal life. Like I want to like experiment in the kitchen a little bit and make some new things, so I have a better repertoire for like when we're stranded on a Thursday night and don't know what to eat. Like, you know, stuff like that where you just like, you need brain power, and like when you're sapping your creative energy for work and you're not replenishing fast enough, but you have to go back to work. It was like, that just kept happening over and over again. And it was, I've had enough.
Yeah.
Have you reconnected with people like from the mattress place?
We've been in contact with Mike since we left, really. Like, he visited us there a couple of times, and like whenever he was out west, and then when we'd come home, I'd say we'd meet up with him like once a year, once every other year.
Yeah, we haven't seen him in a while, but every now and then, he'll reach out to see if, like, if I want to go back and just have some fun animating, like, the Bob puppet again, which I would love to do. That'd be fun. But it hasn't lined up yet.
Redo one of your original ones, like, just recreate it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Fu said there was something really cool about the eyes of the cat, and I don't remember what it was, Fu, because I don't know. I'm a plebeian. Fu.
Oh, maybe please help us to review like the technique you guys experiment with the cat's eyes, like the material. Right. Yeah.
So the base is just Sculpey baked, and then literally painted with nail polish.
Right.
Because it was like that.
I see the glue.
It was the only metallic paint I had at home. That paint was going to be really hard and last for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So put like a shimmery gold over top of the like the teal, and then some colored pencil to like make the edges a little bit darker. That was the base. We just made a bunch of eyeballs and a bunch of different shapes and sizes and painted them all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then Scott animated them.
Yeah, the pupils were kind of hard to figure out, because I normally in stop motion pupils are made out of like thin black styrene, and they'll just cut circles out of it, and then you take some sticky wax and put them on the eyes, and you can slide them around. But the magical cat pupils are oddly shaped, and they're big, so if they were just flat styrene, they'd like kind of sit funny on the curved eye. And I also wanted to be able to change the shape on the fly, like, because cats' pupils change. Yes. So much, they change size and everything. So I finally figured out black electrical tape is a really good solution, because it's shiny, it's black, and it can just mold to the shape of the eye. So what I'll do is I'll take just like a strip of black electrical tape and put it on a popsicle stick and and just like as I'm animating, if I need a specific shape, I'll just cut it out with an X-Acto knife and peel it off and put it on
homemade stickers.
Yeah, it works.
It's like those like that candy that comes in a roll, you just pop out the little circles and eat.
Oh,
yeah,
those
things
are so gross.
I'm not endorsing them, but they exist. Yeah. So, are there tricks to what kinds of nail polish are best for shooting? I don't know.
No, like the junkiest nail polish I had, like in a stash of nail polish I never use. So, like, no.
Yeah.
It's just like we're working from home.
Yeah.
We have to deal with what we got at home, and I don't have any other metallic paint at the moment or a hard coat. And I knew that it would be a hard coat, so that was part of it too.
I am happy even to hear that you say you have jaw for the to render the edge of the eyes, because that's really right. Detailed. No wonder. Yeah, yeah. It really has some variant for the eyes, but especially for one of the episodes, which is so clear that it's at night, maybe that scene with the cockroach, the pupil is changing. So you were saying that you replace just the tape or you replace the whole eye to move it up?
I can't remember if I replaced the whole eyes for that one. I think it was just the tape.
Sometimes
I do that, but I think it was just the tape for that. I just cut out bigger pupils and I just swapped them out. I think I swapped them out in one frame.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were to watch like the raw animation, they would just like snap from small to big. And I think in After Effects later, I like created an in-between frame. Like I just added a little bit of extra black.
Okay.
So that like it actually animated bigger.
That's brilliant. That was nice. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. That was one of the questions I was thinking, oh, the tape might of effect the position of the eyes somehow because the clay need to hold it. So, okay. That's a cool technique. Yeah. Go with the After Effect.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, like, I'll usually start the cat's eyes with, like, the clay over the eyeballs themselves so that I can always make the eyes bigger if I need to. Like, if you get surprised or something, I can always peel clay back to reveal more eye.
Oh.
It does get tricky sometimes, like, when I do the slow blinks, like, in the beginning of the animation, like, having to like take these little slivers of clay and build the eyelid closed and then like slice little slivers out and like clean the clay. It's
that really sounds hard. Horrifying. That's if you think about it in slow detailed. Motion. Like you shut the cat's eyes and just like take a knife and slice it back.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's really tedious. Like the eyes work, but sometimes they can be really problematic, but there's really nothing you can do other than just deal with it.
Hmm.
About the recording, because you guys share to the community that yes, you do capture some of the voice and things, but I'm super wondering that how do you get the right time to capture it, like how to make it so natural. For example, the bug, like, oh, it's a bug. It's like you guys have those reaction recording things. Yeah, it's how does that happen?
Right, the bug episode, we've never had a good sound recording setup. That's always a problem for us.
It's always a room like this where there's stuff in it and maybe some soft goods, but there aren't like any muffling sounds things around us.
Hmm. So the trick that I like to do with sound is I always give the Magical Cat episodes just like ambient noise.
Fuzz.
So that our crappy audio recordings are kind of disguised by like just kind of
just like that
sound. So like when we recorded the bug episode, we recorded it in our bedroom in Los Angeles, and you know, you can hear it. We were on like our heavy traffic street, so you can hear cars going by and stuff like that. So we just recorded ourselves like pretending to react to a disgusting
I mean, which was not wrong. Like, there was so many there that it wasn't hard to conjure the feelings of like, right. Oh, there's another one and it's charging at me.
Right. We had aggressive cockroaches in our apartment in Los Angeles. They were not afraid.
They're so mean.
And so we just recorded ourselves reacting, and then you know, I put it into Magical Cat, and you can, you know, there's traffic noise and ambient noise from the room that we were in, and so I just like put all kinds of filters on it and reverb and stuff just to like disguise the imperfections. So a lot of, we do a lot of recording ourselves and sound effects ourselves, but we also buy a lot of sound effects, like royalty-free sound effects for Magical Cat. Yeah.
Those are like the fill-in ones, because also like we rip audio from like our old videos of our cat that passed, like most of the chirps and the purrs and like all the little things that he would do. Like those are some of the things that we love the most about him, was his voice was so specific. And it's like, it's hard to record your cat because he's not going to sit in front of like a microphone. So you just catch him like thankfully on various iPhones over the years. And they're like, they're not great, but they're not terrible. And like, there's plenty of audio that we can pull out of it. And like, again, kind of blend in that space just because they've all kind of sounded the same.
So what you're doing anyway, though, that's pretty standard, not standard fare. That's the wrong word. It is what's done for post, right? You're using room tone, just a different room tone.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Sound design is like our weakest point. I think we always talk about like we need to learn how to mix audio, and like I'm slowly.
But I think we're both really opinionated about it, so it, like I think that helps.
Yeah. I mean, we know when it sounds terrible. We just try to get to a space where it sounds okay. And through like submitting stuff for clients and festivals, we learned a little bit about like levels and stuff like that in the final mixing and all that. But we really don't, we're kind of guessing when we do sound design stuff.
Wow. But that's really impressive. So, you know, like you're going for a certain target for a level of loudness. Like I'm trying to figure out, like when people ask me for advice, I don't know what to tell them. Cause they go, what should I record in? I'm like, I don't know. I have like my stuff is not what you would use. So what I'm curious to know, like one, you don't know what K weighting is. So like, what do you use to guide your ears? What are you looking at? Like, how are you judging what to put your levels at for other people who want to do it themselves too? And then also like, I'm curious to know for people who don't have the equipment, who are animators and want theirs to sound look good. What do you do?
Okay. Well, one thing is like, a zillion years ago, I bought a $100 microphone, similar to what Foo's working off of right now, but probably not as good.
Yeah.
So that's what we usually record any of our sound effects on.
Yeah, we're like, pull out the fancy mic.
And it doesn't have the, like, the pop shield or whatever that thing's
you
called.
Don't need it.
Don't have that.
Yeah.
And then we just use, like, our very nerdy gaming headphones as our cans, and then
like what
just
I'm
stand
wearing
in front of it. Yeah. And then I think, well, I mean, like I have a pretty musical background. I would not say I have a very strong technically trained, I don't know how to describe it, but choir was my jam for a really long time. So like, I can't read music, but I have like an intense like music background.
Mm. You got an ear for it.
Yeah. We can both hear when it sounds wrong. You can hear when the audio is like hitting a maximum or you're like, ow. That's
quiet. Yeah.
Or like it's too quiet. So like, I think we're just aiming for that, like, middle where it's clear and it's not, it doesn't feel like it's hitting a ceiling or like you're bottoming out and not hearing anything at all.
Right. So, well, there's a couple of technical things that we've learned. You know, you don't want to record where the audio is like peaking and hitting the max. You want to, you want to like see the full waveform.
Okay.
So we know that, and so we bring that all. I was doing everything in like all the mixing. I was doing it in GarageBand because that's such an easy program to use.
Mm-hmm. And free.
And free, yeah.
Yeah, just drag and drop, play with the levels and stuff. And I would get it to where I liked the levels of the sound effects and stuff in just regular headphones. And then I would go into Premiere, and that's where I would set like the max peaks and stuff like that. And I would look up what should like the max peak of audio be for internet videos. And there's all these like nerds like fighting over it.
Cause it's, there is no answer. It's gnarly. It's gnarly.
It's when you're doing creative stuff, or like when you're doing like technically creative stuff and you go on like a message board to just find an answer to a question, like a simple question, there's always a super long debate going on and people are getting really nasty with each other.
Well, because this is one of the few things where there's, even you talk to pros and there's no answer, right? Like there's a certain loudness that you're going for. The problem is, what actually sounds that loud will change depending on what tones, frequencies it is, and how long it is. So you can go above it quickly and it'd be fine. But if you have a lot of stuff over it, then you go to YouTube or Spotify and then pull your whole track down. Mm-hmm. So then you're quiet. It is a mess.
I went to one place where somebody was saying like, dialogue and sound effects or something should be like -12. And so I was doing that. And then I would watch my videos and it would be way quieter than everybody else's videos. And so then somebody else said internet video, if you're uploading the internet, it should be 0. And then I did that and it was too loud. So then I found like -3 is what I've been doing all the Magical Cats at, like the final audio output.
So the -12 we're talking about isn't like your peak. So if you're looking at your meters and just looking at for the highest peaks or what you're exporting at, that's the -12 isn't that. It's what the average is over short periods of time. And there's -12, -14. And in dialogue, it's like I said, it's a mess. So congratulations on even trying, like seriously.
I try to think about like, people who are watching this stuff are just going to be watching on like regular TVs, maybe with like TV speakers and stuff. I just want to make sure it sounds good to those people. It doesn't make sense for me to, you know, I wish I had all this audio equipment, but it doesn't make sense for me to mix it like professionally, like, because like, I'm sure you know about these debates about like, why is the dialogue so quiet? And then the sound effects and the music like
so burst through the drums.
So it's going to mix it so it sounds good to us on our normal everyday stuff.
I'm very picky and Scott's very picky when he puts it together. So then when it has to like pass like the like, no, that's too quiet. I can't tell that he did something. Or
the Lex test.
At me, I hate it.
Right. Yeah. We'll like watch it on the TV like after we're done doing it just to make sure it makes sense. It doesn't sound crazy.
Yeah.
We can hear all the sound effects.
There's a little thing I suddenly think of because about the sound is that when we were talking about the bug thing, when you are recording, when the bug goes to the screen left, you guys say, whoa, it's, I don't know, I'm from my headphone, it's from my left.
Yeah,
like, left side.
I get excited about animating like the panning of the audio because it's like animating. You can ease it like into the left side and the right side and like that's
super detailed.
Also, we're like still kind of a little bit gaming nerds, so you know you like when you have sound where it's telling you where it's coming from. So if you like turn around, it's like oh, it's right there.
Right.
You know.
So, are you doing binaural mixing sometimes?
Doing what?
I'm sorry. So binaural is when it's like fake surround. So it's like when you're wearing headphones, you're listening to something binaural, right? You have a left and a right that are both isolated. So you can do surround mixing translated to binaural. So if you put on headphones, you could hear the full scope. But if you listen on the speakers, it wouldn't sound right. And if you listen in surround, it wouldn't sound right. It's not the same. But never mind. So when you're playing a game and you have the headphones on and it's full surround, that's binaural. It's two speakers acting as a full surround.
Okay.
So I think we might just be cheating that.
We're just doing a very much more basic, just left-right.
Cheat.
Okay. Yeah, it's just like in GarageBand, you have like an audio track, you just turn the pan to the left. It's
right.
Left to right, you know?
Give it 2 years, you'll have a full Atmos studio at home.
Cool.
And now that I said a bunch of words that are jargon, feel free to have your revenge on me about animation stuff now.
Fair.
It's really all the details. Even though, like you guys say, that your resources is so limited, or the facility is limited, but Threadwood really take a lot of care and detail oriented with every aspect. Even though it's simple, limited animation, but to me, it's really perfect. Like you're really focusing on every detail. Yeah, and we all see it really.
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy to say it right to your face. Thank you.